Remember, every woman alive wants Chanel number 5. This is Monitor 63. I'm Barry Nelson. On Wednesday of this past week, as he ended a press conference which was broadcast on NBC News, Frank Sinatra added these words.
Tomorrow's my birthday, and it's probably the best birthday present I ever had.
The reason for his happiness on this particular birthday, the safe return of his kidnapped son, Frank Jr. And so, on Thursday, December 12th, Frank Sinatra celebrated his 46th birthday in the company of his family and close friends. Today, the alleged kidnappers were arrested by the FBI. With this resolution to what might have been a tragic situation, Monitor is pleased to present, as previously planned, a special birthday salute to one of the greatest entertainers of our time, Frank Sinatra. In the hour ahead, we'll hear him talk candidly about many aspects of his career. We'll hear from Frank Sinatra Jr. and how he feels about his famous father. We'll hear some of Frank's friends and associates, and we'll hear, of course, some of the great singing performances which earned him his place at the top of his profession. Here's just a small sample.
Night and day, you are the one. Only you need the moon or under the sun. Whether near to me or far, it's no matter.
He generated excitement, but there was tenderness, too.
If I don't see her each day, I miss her. Gee, what a thrill each time I kiss her. Believe me, I've got a case.
Smoothly sophisticated songs were just as easy for him.
Fingers in my hair, that sly come hither stare, strips my conscience bare, it's witchcraft. And I've got no defense for it, that heat is too intense for it.
And he could project all the charm inherent in this great Gershwin song.
A foggy day in London town, had me low, and it had me down. I view the morning with much alarm.
The when British it came music to music with a message, there was no one more convincing.
Fairy tales can come true, it can happen to you, if you're young at heart. For it's hard, you will find, to be narrow of mind, if you're young.
To begin at the beginning, the young Sinatra, christened Francis Albert, was born in Hoboken, New Jersey, first became interested in music when an uncle gave him a ukulele. In high school, he joined the band, helped organize the glee club, but the initial milestone in his career wasn't reached until 1937. Then, as part of a singing group which called themselves the Hoboken Four, he appeared on the Major Bowes Amateur Hour. Despite the lo-fi quality of the recording of that era, we can hear the brashness and assurance that later became part of the Sinatra style. Listen as he identifies himself to the Major.
I'm Frank, Major. We're looking for jobs. How about it? Everyone that's ever heard us liked us. We think we're pretty good.
All right, let's have it. Hoboken Four.
Shine and sway your bluesy. Why don't you shine? Start with your shoes in. Shine each place up. Make it look like new. Boom, 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 boom. Shine your face.
They won the contest, and Frank had to make a choice between a career as a singer or a career in some other field. His father, a prize fighter who became a fire captain, was reported to have said that singers are sissies. When asked to verify this quote, Frank had this to say.
I'd like to clarify that. He was a little stronger than that. He said, not only singers, he said all show business is for bums. He said, conspicuous in those days that if you didn't have a what they called a good, decent job, such as working in a box factory or shipyards, you were a bum. So he said, you want to get a decent job or you want to be a bum? So I said, well, I prefer the latter. So I left home, and a few things happened to me since then.
Although Frank chose a career as a singer, he had had other ambitions at one time. What changed his mind?
Well, there were several things. I always had designs to go to Stevens Institute of Technology, which was also in my own hometown in Hoboken. It was a fine engineering school. And I thought about that seriously for a long time. And then I worked on a newspaper for 2 years, and I thought about that. But the entertainment world overcame all of that. And strangely enough, one of the biggest contributors to changing my mind was Bing, whom I saw at the Lowe's General Square Theater in Jersey City. And he performed on a stage with a guitarist who's since passed away some years ago, named Eddie Lang. And I watched him, and he had such great ease, and I thought, well, if he can do it that easily, I don't know why I can't. So that was one of the big turning points of my life.
Following this turning point, it has generally been thought that the first big professional break in Frank Sinatra's career was his job with the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra, but he thought otherwise.
I would say that the break actually was with the Harry James Band, because if I hadn't gone with Harry James, I don't know whether or not I would have been heard eventually. The fact that I made some records with Harry James that Tommy heard, either on the air or somebody played them for them, then he eventually made a pitch for me to quit the James Band and go with the Dorsey Band. Of course, I was delighted, because in those days, the Tommy Dorsey Band was considered the showcase for all singers. And so that you might honestly say that the big professional break came with Harry James. Then, of course, as I say, I was showcased so well by Tommy that whatever song I did with the band, he dressed it so well arrangement-wise that they all became hits, and I began to grow more rapidly than I would have, I think, with any other of the orchestras.
And of all the arrangements, this one will probably be remembered longest. Frank Sinatra at the beginning of a great career. We'll continue our special birthday salute to him on Monitor in just a moment. Monitor, yours coast to coast on NBC Radio. In central New York State, we're heard on WSYR, Syracuse. There and elsewhere, you're on the Monitor Beacon. Remember, every woman alive wants Chanel No. 5. Barry Nelson again, and here's part two of Monitor's birthday salute to Frank Sinatra. The early 40s, and Frank soon became as much of an attraction for the excited audiences as the orchestra with which he sang, the great Tommy Dorsey Band. Among those who came to listen and stayed to praise him was the man who had inspired him to embark on a singing career, Bing Crosby.
Oh, I knew Frank when he was with the Dorsey Band. I was a great friend of Tommy's. And Jimmy Dorsey's, too. And I hung around the band a great deal because it was a swinging band and I loved it. And Frank was the vocalist. Thin, tousled-headed kid with a expansive black bow tie. I was the croon period, the Valley and I and Columbo and guys like that. He was the swoon period. Well, that he was the forerunner of that. He started that hysterical era. And every time he'd utter a note, they'd shriek and fall in the aisles and carry on. I think it was sort of an exhibitionism. Each one wanted to show they could swoon deeper and make more noise than the other. He had great talent and great voice and great feel for a song and a wonderful ability to create a mood when he sang. That's, I guess, the hallmark of a good entertainer, particularly a singer.
As Bing Crosby said, Frank Sinatra could create moods, but equally great was his ability to make an audience believe the words he was singing. If there were meaning and poetry in the lyrics of the song, they received the attention they merited. The listener couldn't fail to be moved by a performance like this one.
She may be weary. Women do get weary. Wearing the same shabby dress. And when she's weary, try a little tenderness. She may be waiting, just anticipating things she may never possess. While she's without them, try a little tenderness. It's not just sentimental. She has her grief and her care, and a word that's soft and gentle makes it easier to bear. You won't regret it. Women don't forget it. Love is their whole happiness. And it's all so easy. Try a little tenderness. It
was little wonder that throughout the nation, feminine listeners began to engage in the then new form of audience approval known as swooning. They formed Frank Swoonatra fan clubs, and one organization called itself the Sighing Society of Swooning Sinatra Slaves. And despite speculation to the contrary, they were not merely a press agent creation. Frank remembered them well.
Well, the so-called swooning and squealing actually took place while I was still with Tommy Dorsey. It happened in the New York areas mostly, pinpointing one, for instance, the Paramount Theater, or theaters in Newark and Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia. And then, obviously, when I left the band and tried it on my own, well, they really began to take the place apart. But then I worked on it for a while and listened to it and watched the reaction of the kids. They were really marvelous, I must say. They got a lot of bum raps because people wrote about the fact that they tore clothes and they did that. They really didn't do that. They just wanted to get near you and wanted to say hello and shake your hand and look for a handkerchief as a souvenir or a bow tie, which was easily done because I had 86,000 bow ties, I think, to use a joke. And that was it. They had a marvelous affection for me, and I, in turn, had a great affection for them. I loved their enthusiasm for me and their sweetness, and it's something I'll never forget as long as I live.
When asked to comment on the theory that the swooning was a sociological or psychological manifestation of that particular era, the early war years, Frank parried the question in characteristic fashion.
It might have been, but, you know, if you go back and you think about some of the writings in the magazines and newspapers, many psychiatrists were trying to analyze the kids and find out what about my voice made them squeal, and the so-called fainters. And I think they fainted from lack of food because they'd never leave the theater. They'd sit there for six shows a day. It wasn't from singing, it was from lack of food.
Well, whatever the exact reason, Sinatra's fans continue to demonstrate their affection through the war years and beyond. He piled success upon success, turning out a string of widely acclaimed movie musicals which brought him stardom. Anchors Away, Till the Clouds Roll By, and On the Town, just a few. And he continued to score with one hit song after another, this among them.
Time after time, I tell myself that I'm so lucky to be loving you. So lucky to be the one you run to see. When the day is through, I only know what I know. The passing years will show. You've kept my love so young, so new. Time, you'll hear me say that I'm so lucky to be loving you.
Through much of his career, Frank Sinatra has been the center of considerable controversy. He's had his detractors, but he's had many staunch friends, and one of them, NBC's Skitch Henderson, reveals why as he relates an incident which took place when Frank was rising to the first peak of his career.
The day I got out of the Air Force, I went back to California, confused. I had no place else to go. Before that day was out, the phone rang, and it was the Italian, as we called him. He had heard from one of the song pluggers that I was out of the Air Force and was looking a little seedy on Hollywood Boulevard. Before the day was out, I had a call from him saying, I'm opening at the Waldorf Astoria tomorrow night. Get your body on an airplane if you can. And you got a job. And it's incredible, but within 48 hours after I get out of the Air Force, because of the warmth of this human being, I was at work making, I think he paid me some incredible sum, like $350 a week. He forced the management of the Waldorf, literally, to give me a beautiful room. We only did one show at midnight, and Frank, every night that he went to the theater, he saw to that I had a seat to go along, just to reorientate me into civilian life. This is a debt that you can never repay. It's a debt that you can never say thank you for, and I've never been able to. I've tried a million times with the guy.
It wasn't many years after this that Frank Sinatra found himself in the unhappy position of being considered finished as a performer. His record sales slumped severely. His movie studio dropped him. And his private life encountered difficulties, too. He was asked if he could account for what some people termed the nosedive of his career.
Well, it wasn't a... You cannot say that it was a career that took a nosedive, because that was always there. It was I who took the nosedive. I just stopped paying attention to what I was doing. And I didn't stay on the ball for about a year, year and a half. And I just didn't keep up with the rest of the world, and I fell behind. But it was a great lesson to me, as it is, I think, to all people in all walks of life. I found that there were friends still rooting for me, but they thought that I wanted to be left alone, so they respected my position in those days. And then one day I woke up and said, well, it's time to go back to work. And that's really what happened. It's just as simple as that.
And what followed bore out his contention. As a matter of fact, Mitch Miller, who produced the records that Frank made during the so-called slump, told us that only a few years later, those same records were tremendous hits.
He made some beautiful records. In fact, some of his best records were made then. American Beauty Rose, Paris Blues, Why Try to Change Me Now, Birth of the Blues, Hello Young Lovers. And what happened was that Frank's image, because his movies, he was out of movies, he was out of television, and the people sort of got off of him in the sense that they thought he wasn't a good boy. Well, that has nothing to do with singing, as was later proved, because these same records that we couldn't give away at that time, within 3 to 4 years afterwards, brought Frank over $1 million worth of royalties, and that's an awful lot of money.
And as you listen to the power and authority in this particular one we're about to play, you can understand why.
They heard the breeze in the trees singing weird melodies, and they made that the start of the blues. And from a jail came the wail of a downhearted frail, and they played that as a part of the blues. From a whippoorwill way up on a hill, they took a new note, pushed it through a horn until it was worn into a blue note. That the Southland gave birth to the blues. They nursed it, then they rehearsed it, and they sent out that news.
Birth of the Blues, and the beginning of a second rise to fame in the career of Frank Sinatra. Well, we'll pause briefly now, and then Monitor 63 will return with the second half hour of its birthday salute to Frank Sinatra. Still to be heard from Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra Jr. Also, some amusing highlights from radio shows in which Frank participated, and, of course, more of the songs he made famous. Barry Nelson here, inviting you to stay tuned. Here's Jonathan Winters for Chrysler.
Granny Frickert, how do you feel about being selected Truck Driver of the Year?
Crazy. I've been a clean truck driver for over 50 years. Look, when I hold out my left arm, see the tattoo? It says, I'll help you pass.
As an experienced driver, what advice do you have for car owners listening in?
Always take your car to Chrysler Corporation Certified Car Care Service. It's a health plan for cars. All Chrysler, Plymouth, and Dodge dealers have it. Say, Dal, how do you think I look in skin-tight leotards?
Weekends are different. So is Monitor on the NBC Radio Network.